Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, board member for Pardes. Please tell your friends about this podcast series. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. Remember that you don't need an iPod to listen. Any computer with speakers will do. Thank you for your help and time on this. In this shiur, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses the Torah portions Nitzavim and Vayelech. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we have two parshiot, Parshiot Nitzavim and Vayelech. Parshat Nitzavim always falls the Shabbat before Rosh Hashanah. This is not coincidental, and in a few moments we'll see what is the connection between Parshat Nitzavim and Rosh Hashanah. I would like to focus on the beginning of Parshat Nitzavim, which discusses a covenant which is being made between Moshe, God, and the Jewish people. There's a question which can be raised: why do we need to make a covenant now? The Jewish people have already entered into a covenantal relationship with God. We see this in Exodus in chapter 24. When the Jews are at Mount Sinai, in the context of the revelation, according to Nachmanides, immediately following the revelation at Sinai, Moshe gathers the people together. And in that gathering, Moshe writes down the words of God, goes through a sacrificial service, and then has a ceremony in which he takes blood, sprinkles it on the people, and in which he also reads the words of God to the people, where the response of the people is Na'aseh v'nishma, chapter 24, verse 7. Na'aseh v'nishma, a very famous phrase in rabbinic literature, where the Jewish people say, we shall do and we shall listen. It is this covenant which is made at Sinai, which is the beginning of Jewish peoplehood. At that moment, the Jewish people become the people of God. So what is happening in our parsha? In the beginning, when Moshe says to the people in chapter 29 of Deuteronomy, verse 11, you are gathered here to pass through the covenant and the curse which God is making with you today. The simplest explanation is to say that the original covenant was made with the generation that left Egypt. This covenant is being made with the generation that is entering the land of Israel. It seems that every generation needs to renew the covenant with God. This is a covenant which is being made before Moshe dies. It's in a transition period when Moshe is handing over the baton to Joshua. And at this critical moment, it is important for the Jewish people to renew their relationship with God. Perhaps I will insert now, this may be the reason why Parshat Nitzavim is read every year before Rosh Hashanah. That it is important for us to realize we need every year to renew the covenant with God. We find a similar phenomenon later on in the book of Joshua. In Joshua chapter 24, Joshua gathers all the people in the city of Shechem. And in fact, there are many linguistic parallels between that section and our section. And the purpose of this gathering is once again to renew the covenant. And I'll just point out that in chapter 24 of Joshua, verse 25, it says, "And Joshua made a covenant with the people on that day, and he established it as a statute and law in Shechem. And Joshua wrote down these words in the book of God. And he takes a stone and establishes it by the sanctuary of God." So that once again, before Joshua dies, Joshua sees that it's important to renew the covenant with God. But our parsha is not only a renewal, but it also has its nuances. And I would like to see what makes this parsha unique, different from the original covenant that was made. In chapter 29, verse 9, the parsha begins by saying, "You are standing today, all of you, before the Lord your God, the heads of your tribes, the elders, the policemen, every Jewish man, the young, the women, the strangers in your midst, from the hewers of wood to the drawers of water." On the one hand, the Torah emphasizes that everyone is present. This is a covenant now which is being made with the total Jewish population. But on the other hand, it specifies every segment of the population. And in this way, this covenant is different from the original that was made. In the original covenant, all of the Jewish people are gathered. The original covenant is designed to now become the basis of Jewish peoplehood. This covenant is also being made with all of the Jewish people, but this covenant highlights the individual. So that the focus in our parsha is not a general covenant made with the Jewish people, but one which is being made with every single individual, irregardless of their status or their position in society. The parsha is called Parshat Nitzavim, which I have translated as "Standing Firm." It's very interesting that in the three sections which I have mentioned previously, where covenants were made, at Mount Sinai, over here, and later on in the book of Joshua, the word Nitzav, or a variation of it, Lehityatzev, appears. Nitzav does not mean only to stand. Nitzav, as I translated, means to stand firm, to stand at attention, to be ready, to now take on a mission. In modern Hebrew, when young men are conscripted to the army, their conscription order is called a tzav hityatzvut. They are now being called upon to stand up, to take a stand, to be ready to do whatever is needed. And that is the understanding of what is happening here. A second difference between this covenant and the one at Sinai is articulated in verse 13, where it says, "And not only with you am I making this covenant and this curse, but I am doing it with all those who are present here today and all those who are not here today." Which means that this is a covenant which is being made for generations. When people refer to the idea that all souls were present at Sinai, all souls entered into the covenantal relationship, in fact, it is this covenant which is binding all souls for all generations. And this may also be related to the word nitzav. You are standing firm in the sense of what is happening right now is something which will impact for all time. The commitment which the people are taking upon themselves will be binding not only for themselves, but for all generations. And one other thing, which I did not mention earlier, in this covenant, it speaks not only about the covenant, but alato. This comes up in verse 11. It also comes up in the verse that I read now, verse 13. Allah is a curse. The idea is, it's not only that you're signing a contract with God. There are consequences, as the Torah will go into in a few moments. Should you violate the covenant, curses will fall upon you. Curses have already been enumerated in detail in last week's parsha, in chapter 28. But in our parsha, we also have the curses that are mentioned. And now I would like to pursue the continuation of this discussion. Moshe begins in verse 15 by saying, "You know what it was like in the land where you dwelled, and you know what it's like in the lands that we have crossed of the nations around you. You saw all of their abominations, you saw their idols, wood and stone, silver and gold." And then we come to the key. Moshe says in verse 17, "Lest there be among you a man or a woman, a family or a tribe, whose heart today turns from God to go after and serve the gods of the nations, lest there is among you a root which will then bear bitter fruit." The book of Dvarim is filled with warnings against idolatry. And that seems to be a major preoccupation, that when the Jewish people will come into the land of Israel, they will be led astray. They will be tempted to follow what the nations are doing and engage in idolatry. And this seems to be something which needs to be uprooted. And it's very interesting, the image which Moshe describes, how it begins. Maybe there is a man or a woman, one individual, whose heart turns, who simply has thoughts, who's tempted to go worship idols. And Moshe describes this as being a root which will then go on to bear very bitter fruit. The temptation to worship idols may very easily be led to action, may easily lead to action. What began with one individual may end up becoming a family, a tribe. And in verse 18, Moshe says, perhaps, when you hear the words of the curse, you will bless yourself, or he will bless himself in his heart, and say, peace will be to me. I will follow the compulsions of my heart in order to add the satiated to the thirsty. Maybe let me begin with the end of the verse. The rabbis understood what Moshe is saying is, initially you will have a thirst, a desire for idolatry. It'll be exotic. It'll be tempting. After a while, even when you're satiated, you'll still go on doing it. There's a slippery slope. But the point of this pasuk is to say that when you, the individual, do your own thing, go your own way, follow the muscles of your heart, knee-jerk responses, at the same time you will bless yourself in your heart and say, I'll be fine. The curse will not happen. Why? And this is a classic example of what's called eating your cake and having it too. Whereas what you are doing is separating yourself from the Jewish people by following the whims of your heart, by pursuing the temptations, you still want to enjoy the benefits of being part of the Jewish people. So that you say, I will do as my heart desires. But the curse will not happen because the rest of the population is not doing that. And the rest of the population is then enjoying the blessing of God, so that I will be able to have my cake and eat it too. I will be able to follow my heart, follow my temptations, and yet nevertheless enjoy all the blessings which God is bringing upon the Jewish people. In verse 19, in verse 20, God says, don't think that. God will not forgive you. The wrath of God will come upon that individual, and all the curses mentioned in this book will rest upon him, and God will wipe him out from the face of the earth. God will separate him out for evil from among all the tribes of Israel. If I were to stop here, the point of this section is to highlight individual responsibility and accountability. I mentioned earlier that the covenant at Sinai is made with the community, with the total Jewish population. Very often, it is easy for the individual to somehow be lost in the group. For one to say, the group is basically okay. And so what? If I do things that are wrong, but in the end, I'm part of the group. And the group is enjoying all the benefits of their proper behavior. This section is emphasizing how every single individual is responsible for their actions and will be held accountable. And this is a major theme of Rosh Hashanah. According to the rabbinic understanding, Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, when every creature comes before God and is now held accountable for what they did. Where you can't hide behind the group and somehow reap their benefits. But our parsha goes one step further. When we read on in verses 21 and 22, there's all of a sudden a radical shift. It says in verse 21, "And the later generation, your children who will arise after you, will say, 'The stranger who comes from a distant land.' They will see all of the plagues of this land, all of the ills that God has brought upon you. Sulfur and salt, burning, destruction. There will be no planting, no growth. Nothing will come up from the earth. This destruction will be comparable to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, which God did in his wrath and anger. And the nations will say in verse 23, 'Why did God do this to this land? What brought about this wrath?' And the response will be, 'Because they abandoned the covenant which they made when they left Egypt. They went and they worshipped other gods.'" All of a sudden, we're speaking not about the punishment of an individual. We're speaking about the punishment of the society, of the land. And we're speaking about total destruction. Destruction which echoes what happened in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah. How do we make this shift from the individual to the land? It would seem to be that when Moses is trying to tell the people, is the ultimate responsibility of an individual, and that is, not only are we responsible for our deeds in terms of the impact which it has on us individually, the realization that what we do destroys us as individuals can bring about the curse on us. But we have to realize as individuals what is the impact of our actions on society at large. To what degree is it that we have the ability to destroy a whole society? We have the ability to corrupt a society, and as a result of that, to bring about ultimate destruction of that society. It is a very, very heavy responsibility which the individual bears. It is very easy sometimes for individual people to say, "I'm only one person. So what? If I go off and do my thing, so what? If I don't take upon myself my public responsibility, other people will bear the load." But this section is saying that ultimately the society is built upon the individuals in their midst. And very often individuals can totally unravel and undermine a society. So that Moshe is saying to them, not only will God separate you out and bring upon you the curse, but it could be that if you're not held in check, you may ultimately bring about the destruction of society. At the very end of chapter 29, it says, "Hanistarot l'Hashem Elokeinu, the hidden things are to the Lord your God. V'hanigloth lanu ulevanenu ad olam, but the revealed things are to us and to our children forever. La'asot et kol divrei ha-Torah hazot, to do all the words of this Torah. There is one explanation that the rabbis give to this verse, which says, this verse teaches us that the society is obligated to eradicate evil in its midst. When society sees an individual who is worshiping idols, who may be doing other things that can be potentially destructive, corrupting to the whole society, the society has to now deal with that individual. The society cannot allow that individual to be a root which will then bear bitter fruit. And hence the rabbis derive from this verse that every Jew is responsible for another. Kol Yisrael arevin ze lazeh. In Judaism, there is not the concept of you do your thing, I do my thing. But there's the sense that if we're a community, we are equally responsible for each other. With the realization that what one segment of the community does can very well impact adversely on the rest of the society. I can't marginalize an individual or a group and say that's a fringe element, but it could be that that group in the end will totally unravel who we are. Verse 28 says, the things which are hidden are to God, but the things that are revealed are to us. The things that we see that are problematic, we can't brush under the carpet. We have to deal with them. There is always a tension between having a society which is coercive, which is repressive, which takes away the freedom of the individual, and between a situation of a society which allows such total freedom that it creates anarchy and becomes self-destructive. Every society has to find the balance between preserving the freedom of the individual and at the same time preserving the dignity and the physical survival of the society. In our context, Moses is telling the people, idolatry is something which can totally unravel a society. It cannot be allowed in any form. It has to be nipped in the bud at the moment that people are thinking something, and even if it's an individual, because if it's not kept in check, it can totally destroy the society at large. As I began by saying this covenant is a covenant made with the individual, it is important for us as we approach Rosh Hashanah to ask ourselves who we are, each one individually. How much do we take ourselves seriously? How much do we take responsibility for the actions that we do? How much do we realize that our actions impact not only on our individual souls, but our actions impact on the people around us? whether it be family, friends, community, or even future generations. If we realize the importance of this covenant in Parshat Nitzavim and the heavy burden it places on each of us as individuals, then perhaps Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, can become more meaningful experiences, can become periods of very serious soul-searching, days of transformation. If each individual goes through that process, then perhaps we can then have a society which is in fact the society that understands the covenant of God, the society which is empowered by each of the individuals, where each individual, rather than bringing down their fellow, in fact empowers the other, brings out the full strength of the other. May we merit to be able to have that strength to create a society which is understands the covenant, actualizes all the blessings, where the curses will disappear, and where the blessings will be not only to our society, but to all of humanity. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send us your email via podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.